Good afternoon, everybody. This is Barb Pello, Group Director at InfoTrends, and I'm going to be moderating your webinar today. What we'll be talking about is multi-channel communications products and services. What we're finding is that as print service providers expand their portfolio, they can integrate their operation into the client's marketing infrastructure and participate in the much more lucrative marketing value chain. Marketing executives today are actively searching for solutions that are going to help them gain increased customer knowledge, improve direct marketing results, and quantify those results. And service providers can fulfill that need by adding multi-channel communications to new or existing variable data applications. With multi-channel offerings, print service providers have new opportunities for value-added services. And, oh, by the way, can drive increased volume to digital presses at the same time. What I've got are three practitioners, John Siston, CTO and CMO of Universal, Paul McFarlane, Vice President of Sales and Marketing at BOPI, and Dean Petrolakis, Senior VP of Business Development and Ryder Dickerson. And what they're going to be doing is sharing with you how they're adding value to their customers through the delivery of multi-channel communications. Before we get started, what I did want to do is provide some tips for those people that are participating in the webinar. First of all, if you're having any technical difficulties, what you should do is let us know by using the Ask a Question button. You should disable pop-up blockers. And to get a PDF version of this presentation, click the Download Slides button. If you like what you're seeing or hearing, you can tell peers by using the Invite a Colleague button, or you can let us know by clicking the Survey button and sending your feedback. You can submit today's questions, and we'll be taking them throughout the course of the webinar by using the Ask a Question box. And again, please feel free to key in your questions at any time. And you can view this event online for the next 90 days. Now, what I'd like to do is just take for a second and share with you what we'll be covering today. First of all, I'm going to spend just a minute talking to you about the multi-channel dilemma and what people are seeing in the world of multi-channel communication. Then what you'll hear from is practitioners at work, and you'll hear from John Siston, Paul McFarlane, and Dean Petrolakis. We'll wrap up with some recommendations and conclusions. And then we'll actually provide and do your Q&A. Now, with that as a backdrop, let me share a few market statistics that we're dealing with. First of all, what we're seeing in today's market is that companies are moving toward more targeted and more personalized campaigns. InfoTrends recently did a study, and we talked to more than 400 marketing executives, and what we saw was that in most instances, what they were dealing with was much, much more personalization. And, Stephanie, I'm going to ask you to advance to the next slide for me. And in more than 60% of the instances, what we saw was that they were dealing with personalized one-to-one marketing or one-to-few marketing, whereas only about 40% were really dealing with mass marketing-type communications. The next thing that we saw was that budget allocations were changing. In a recent study and survey by eMarketer, what we saw was that the biggest increases taking place were in social, online, direct, online video, and mobile. We were also seeing that mass media was showing significant decreases in overall spending. Basically, what we're finding is that marketing executives are really looking at tools and techniques that deal with showing the money. The next thing that we saw relative to a study that InfoTrends recently completed was that the average number of media types used in a specific campaign were, in fact, three. And we actually talked to 518 marketers, and what we saw was that the majority of them were using at least three different types of media in any campaign. The interesting piece is that what we're finding in today's world is that marketers really need to keep all of those channels turned on. If you take a look at today's consumer, what we're finding is that they're dealing with the age of gadgets. And what you're seeing is that 85% of consumers today have a cell phone. Between 50 and 59% of consumers actually have a desktop or a laptop computer. They've got MP3 players, game consoles, and e-books. What that means is that you've got to be able to communicate with whatever channel the consumer wants. What we're finding is that this is giving rise to a new set of terminology. And one of the buzzwords that we're seeing in 2011 is a concept called right touching. And what right touching means is that you're engaging in a cross-media communication strategy that's customized for individual prospects and customers forming segments across a customer-defined life cycle. What it means is that we're delivering the right message, the right value proposition, with the right tone at the right time, with the right frequency, and the right media. And that's really the challenge that we see as we move into 2011. What we're seeing is that it's personalization plus engagement. And what that means is that you've got to look at all of those channels out there. Internet usage surpassed 2 billion in 2010. There are more than 500 million Facebook users. There are 85 members of LinkedIn. You've got more than 106 million Twitter users. YouTube video views exceed 2 billion a day. And, oh, by the way, when you look at SMS texting, people generated 6.1 trillion texts in 2010. Now, with that as a backdrop, what I want to do is share with some of the perspectives of our panelists that are working on helping their clients not just with one-to-one communications, but with actually generating multi-channel communications. First, what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn it over, and I'm hoping the slides are advancing, to John Sisson. And John's going to share with you what Universal is doing. John, take it away.
Thanks, Barb. And first of all, I wanted to thank HP and InfoTrends for inviting us. And what I'm going to do is just talk a little bit about Universal, talk about the importance of multi-channel communications to us and to the print volume that we generate, talk a little bit about an effective implementation of a multi-channel campaign through the use of an example, and then some recommendations for folks who want to do this. So Universal is basically the consolidation of a bunch of the very well-known names in the printing business, particularly high-end commercial printing, Acme and United Litho, but also in the financial printing arena through the acquisition of Daniels. We're about $100 million in sales. We have three locations in New England. 300 employees, and we serve three distinct markets with sheet-fed and web printing, mailing, fulfillment and distribution, and multi-channel communications. The three markets that we serve are financial, through banks and investment companies, and we lump insurance companies in there, educational, and then what we call everything else, which is commercial and direct mail. And honestly, from the standpoint of focus on multi-channel communications, our initial push was in the financial and commercial markets, and we weren't really sure that we saw an application in the educational market. But as it turns out, we have business spread across those three markets in everything we do, including multi-channel communication. The example I'm going to use is in the financial marketplace, but we have had some success through our sales force in each one of these markets. So the opportunities are everywhere from our perspective. And I think as a printer and like printing companies, we need to turn cylinders. A big portion of our business is still output, whether it be digital or offset printing. But our customers have changed, and they're needing to communicate with their customers in a different way. And several years ago, our CEO, Bill Fitzgerald, developed a vision of thought to distribution as what drives our company. And I think it's important to have a vision for the company as something different than just putting ink on paper, because as Barb just illustrated with the preamble, there's too much going on in all industries to think that that's going to be long-term sustainable without supporting the customers in a number of ways. And through that vision, we developed a platform we call uDrive, which gives our customers the ability to leverage their data and their content and send personalized messages out through print, email, personalized landing pages, and drive fulfillment directly as a result of any action that someone takes. And the world of multi-channel marketing is really about measurement. In the traditional print, you know, it's hard to measure response, particularly in mass marketing. But when you're personalizing, and particularly when you're driving people to a personalized URL, you get direct feedback from your customers. And the position that we take is that our customers are going to receive a higher return on investment for their marketing dollars by leveraging multiple channels. As Barb said in one of those earlier slides, using more than one, print being one of them, but using more than one channel proves to be significantly more effective from a marketing perspective in customer retention, acquisition, and just increasing sales. So this is the platform that we use, and the example, as I said, is a financial customer that we have. They're a large institution. They provide 401k services to a variety of different customers. So they would be coming to your organization and signing you up for the 401k and helping you administer it and so forth. And to be clear, they were a customer of Universal for our regulatory and marketing print. And as a result, the salesperson took the initiative to move really to understand more about the customer, not from a purchasing standpoint, but from a marketing standpoint of what were the issues for marketers. And basically what they said was that onboarding 401k customers was an issue, and they needed to try to increase contribution both from those folks that they onboarded, but also from existing customers. And that basically the way they did that was through the what you would expect on the standard printing side, is they had a welcome kit. Contributions were a little less than what they had as a goal. And the process, because of the traditional ordering process, et cetera, took weeks. And so their objectives really were to shorten the cycle time, and certainly to provide an engaging reason why someone would either sign up for their 401k or increase their contribution. They wanted to create campaigns that leveraged multi-channel, mainly because of a recognition that there was a growing preference for electronic communications on the part of their customers. Excuse me, and I think that's significant in that yes, print is still a viable part of how they reach out to their customers, but they recognize that more people are using the Internet, et cetera, to do these type of things, and they wanted to make sure that they were leveraging every opportunity and every channel to reach out to the customer. At the same time, they wanted to support their end customer's brand. So when they sign up a company to become their 401k provider and they send out messaging, it should both be about the financial institution but also about the end customer, because their employees are the ones that are going to get this messaging, and they need to know that it's coming from a trusted source, et cetera. Particularly in this environment, because the personalization has something to do with how much money somebody makes or their employee number, et cetera, the level of security involved, et cetera, the need that this be a trusted source from a branded, recognized source is critical. And in fact, in several of the programs that we run, we go direct to the employee's email address with some of the communication, and we go through a process of whitelisting those email addresses with the company to make sure that they get through.
John, quick question
sure.
for you. How is the quality of the customer's data then?
The quality of the customer's data is excellent. I mean, I think that's one of the advantages in this environment is, this may be an acquisition campaign, but it's acquisition of a known universe. These are email addresses that are known. It's salaries that are known. So the quality of the data is fantastic. But I will also say, and I think one of the points I don't mean to skip over here is that I don't I don't want to give anybody the impression that our customers don't care about what this costs. Part of the goals in this program were that they be able to do this and then replicate it for every new customer that they brought on, not only quickly, but cost-effectively. And so that second bullet point about creating campaigns that can be leveraged across multiple clients was critical in the process from their perspective. So basically the way the campaigns worked is we sent out a personalized postcard with a unique URL to the participants in a or the employees of a company that was signed up by this financial institution, and that drove them to a URL, the top of which looked like this. So the first part is compelling, and we don't take any credit for the design, but, you know, it's change up your contribution. You know, here in New England we have Tim Wakefield, so it's all about the knuckleball, but I'm sure they're throwing the change up in New York or whatever. At any rate, it was something that they thought was compelling from a design perspective, but even more compelling, this graph that you see in this personalized URL is drawn based on the data that they have for the individual signing up for the 401k. In other words, you will make this much more money if you increase your contribution to the 401k or if you contribute 2, 4, 6%, whatever it is. And that's directly tied to the income that they're making and, you know, some formula for how much more they'll make if they increase their contribution. And the bottom of the URL is click here and go. And so if you think about this from the standpoint of the way it used to be done with paper, there were forms to be filled out, et cetera, et cetera. It could take weeks. In this case, the feedback from us as the folks hosting this URL to the financial institution is instantaneous. And so from a return on investment perspective, signing up one 401k customer 2 weeks before they would have means that their assets under management is increased instantaneously, and that's 2 weeks of the value of the money, et cetera, et cetera. You can see that, frankly, the cost of the program is insignificant to the return that they get out of it. So the results for this certainly were a marketing ROI, but they also had this engaging design. I think you could tell from looking at it that it's somewhat of a template, so it can be leveraged by changing certain graphical elements very easily, and so it can be repurposed for the next customer and the next customer. It's targeting the individual with messaging that's very relevant to them and that they care about because it's based on their salary, employee number, et cetera. The reduction in time to market is going from weeks of process to instantaneous, and they really have increased the deferrals. And, you know, while at the same time presenting their customer's brand and their own brand for each of the campaigns, you know, to remind the end customer that they are the 401k provider, and I like to think lock them in and keep them loyal to them as a provider. And so with that, I think the only thing left to say is to talk a little bit about our own process. I hope you can see from the example that really the recommendations are around understanding your customer, because each one of these programs is going to be different. Our salespeople have to learn the difference, well, really the understanding of what are our customers' objectives. A lot of cases when you're printing marketing materials and other things, it's how many pages and how many, and really what the customer's using it for is somewhat immaterial. But I think in the case of multi-channel communication, you really have to understand what the program's objectives are so that you know that you're measuring the right thing and you're able to report on what the results are. From the standpoint of a successful implementation, clearly you need the software to do it. You also need the process to connect the various pieces. I think it's critical to have, in order to keep the costs reasonable, a workflow that allows you to do the variable printing connected to potentially variable emails, connected to PEARLs, all from the single database, and allow, and not in this example, but in others, to do direct fulfillment as a result of an action that somebody who reaches the PEARL might take. Yes,
John, I do have one question for you, and that is, when you take a look at the person that was the ultimate decision maker, how did you reach him to sell this campaign?
As I said, this was a current customer of ours, and our relationship was with the purchasing organization. But the salesperson was able to leverage his contacts as coaches, really, and as our sponsor to reach their customer, because ultimately, in most organizations, the purchasing organization, this changes the reporting structure, but at least their customer are various marketing arms or business owners. And so we were able to present, from a capability standpoint, something that piqued interest and got us an introduction to the vice president of marketing. And coincidentally, they were looking for somebody who was capable of doing everything in a single system so that they could have direct feedback to their plan admin, who are the folks who collect the data.
Great. And one last question before we turn over to Paul, by the way.
Yeah.
What software are you using to do this program?
Yeah, so we use Interlink One,
okay.
Which is, and I should say we spent a lot of time evaluating various pieces of software, and the very nice thing about Interlink One is the ability to use a single database to connect print, email, fulfillment, and pearls with personalized data. So we're pretty pleased with that.
And I have one last question. And actually, if Paul or Dean want to pipe up, I'd be delighted as well. But one of the folks said that this sounds like a great opportunity for a large, well-capitalized printer. But what about the smaller shops? Any comments on that from our three panelists? And I'll start with you, John.
I think it's possible to do, and on some level maybe necessary to do, regardless of that. And there are probably individual pieces of software that might be less expensive or whatever. I would argue that it depends on your size, but it's worth the effort and the investment. And I have to say, Interlink is one of those companies that that allows you to do it on a somewhat of a pay-as-you-go basis. So you just need to find things like that so that the investment is in line with the sales.
Yeah, and I would comment also that I think, guys, that there's a number of software as a service options out there today, and you need to look at those options and alternatives. And by the way, they include, companies like Mindfire and XMPie and PageFlex,
yep,
where you can rent the infrastructure versus buying the infrastructure. Okay. Well, with that, John, I want to thank you, and I am going to turn it over now to Paul McFarlane, who's the Vice President of Sales and Marketing for the OPI. Paul?
Thanks, Bob. BOPI was established in 1947. We're located in central Illinois. We have 55 employees. And at the end of the 90s, early 2000s, we invested quite heavily in digital technology. And in 2001, we purchased our first digital press, an Indigo UltraStream. That was then upgraded to two HP 3050s and recently a HP 5500. At the same time, during the last 10 years, we identified that the future of our business was not in a traditional sheet-fed print, and we adopted a number of non-print solutions over those last 10 years that are really at the front end but drive print at the back. And that's allowed us to evolve into realistically two divisions, the print division and the innovation division of BOPI. Our innovation division primarily offers marketing logistics and marketing effectiveness. To tie that down to a nutshell, you're really talking about what we term a constant collateral solution. A lot of people call it a digital storefront. And marketing effectiveness really is using Pearl technology to provide measured marketing automation. Our mantra really is test, learn, optimize, and repeat. We have used various options of software and technology throughout this period. We started with what we call Series 1 solutions, which really are standalone silos of excellence. When we were using them, they didn't necessarily communicate with each other. And as we grew as a company and as our client demand increased, we migrated up to what we call a Series 2 solution and branded that as Boppy Impact, and that is, in fact, the Interlink 1 solution. The Series 1 solutions, when we had them, really stood alone. They were silos of excellence and still are. I think today they probably got more opportunity for cross-channel marketing too. But at the time that we had them, you were extracting databases and then merging spreadsheets. What we needed to was to actually move forward on that. And we took on Interlink One as an ASP model. That has six modules. The main thing to us when we looked was very similar to John. It was to do with the data. We found all the other solutions, you put the data into the solution, whereas the unique thing we found was, and what we wanted, was to take the data and apply the solution to the data and hold that data. The nice thing is it's fully integrated. All the modules talk to each other, and they integrate with the database, and those modules can be switched on or off as required. This is a graphic of Boppy Impact. Imagine the data in the middle with the six modules around, and based upon which modules are switched on or off and in which combination, you can provide the client with all those services or solutions that are listed around there. Again, the integration is important. For example, somebody in that database can be sent a Perl mailer or an eBlast Perl. When they respond, the data will be history within that contact database, and you will be able to determine how they answered the questions, which questions they answered. At the same time, anything they did in terms of updating their profile would automatically flow and automatically update the database. And then you can have an auto-trigger using the warehouse to auto-trigger fulfillment of any incentive you might have in the program. Additionally to that, you can then obviously API link to their MIS CRM or any specific logistics that they might have. So if we take three of those modules and combine them, the warehouse, e-store, and orders, we create a constant collateral solution. So using those, we can come up with a custom solution for our clients and provide any or all of those services or solutions on the right-hand side. I've got two case studies today. The first one's on a constant collateral solution for a pharmaceutical distributor of ours, headquartered in central Illinois. We provided them with a constant collateral solution back in 2004 and still do so. They had seven distribution centers. Each distribution center had a buyer, and there was no corporate consistency. And what they actually ended up with an average of 30 products per distribution center, is the potential to have 210 versions of one PMS color. They had over 20 different envelopes. They were using old and obsolete product. The one distribution center was using a 12-year-old anniversary letterhead. The business cards had to be ordered through corporate and through the graphics department, hence the resulting in a six-week lead time. Our solution was to provide a digital storefront for them. We took all the envelopes, we consolidated 20 down to 6. We printed those in the corporate PMS color with the logo, converted them and hold them ready for imprinting when any of the distribution centers order them. And we helped the client create a business card template so that that data can be entered locally and proofed locally at the distribution center level. What that meant for the client, overall objective was to have one corporate logo. Up until that point, they'd had many. Very pleased with that, and also the consistency of the corporate image and the brand. They're very pleased by it. They have no involvement from a corporate point of view in any of the managing of the inventory or the fulfillment or the ordering, and it's freed up those employees. It's a soft dollar saving for them, freed up those employees to concentrate on their core competencies. What it's meant for us is all those products that are online, I have a streamlined and standardized workflow. Basically, once that's submitted, it gets to the press with minimal human intervention. The client has increased the number of products on the storefront. and all we do is create one report and one invoice at the end of the month and send that off. As part of this, we've become the printer of record. Non-site revenue is over $160,000. We have in excess of $200,000 worth of revenue from this client, and only 40 of that was from the site. This site was their second order to us. Prior to that, we'd only ever sold, we actually sold one job, which was 550 digital postcards. And we are now involved in their marketing planning meetings at the concept stage, which is absolutely where you want to be. A second case study here is for a Midwest insurance company. It's not the big red one. And they actually are a very new client to us. We acquired a competitor in May this year, and as part of that, we obviously adopted some new clients. This particular client we've not dealt with as Boppy before, and the previous company was dealing with the creative and purchasing people. But the client marketing department was aware of Pearl technology. They'd not utilized it. The creative department had passed on our promotional materials, and we were asked to go in and talk to them. When we talked to them, one of the questions I had is how do you measure your marketing efforts? And they said, not very well. You know, if our last generic mailer was 50,000 of them, and we got 20 business reply cards. So we introduced them to the Pearl technology. We used a small database for a post-trade show follow-up of 500, got them used to the technology, proved the solution was viable, showed how you can measure the response rate, and they, in fact, said that the leads that they got out of that were far higher quality and further, much higher interest, so they were shortening up that sales cycle.
I got a question for you on this one. You know, you're starting to deal with a lot of the customer's data.
Uh-huh.
Where do you house that data for the client? How willing are they to relinquish that data?
We haven't had any major issues. The only ones that really become an issue is if you're dealing with HIPAA or SEC, and you have to provide certain guarantees and provide documentation of what your processes are. We also have done some work with the FDA, and that comes down to creating custom reports to be able to report to them. Generally, I would say data, in this particular client's case, very good. But I think as a general rule, most enterprises' data is pretty bad.
Okay.
It could be in many areas.
Okay.
Client identified that they sell through independent agents across the country, and they identified that the independent agents who were selling life insurance as their primary product were very vulnerable with the changes in the health insurance laws, and they were looking at, they didn't know if they had a future. So with that vulnerability, they targeted independent agents selling high levels of health insurance, and they targeted 300,000 of them. And they wanted to sell their whole life campaign to them, product to them. After that initial test, the client wanted to actually run 300,000 pulls, which initially sounded really great, but I think part of the job that we have is to think for them as their strategic partner. And what we did is we did consult and strategize with them, and what happened is that we came up with a decision to run a pilot test of 10% of those, 30,000. We wanted to further prove the technology. Our first run was with 500. We wanted to further prove the technology and confirm to upper management that they'd made the correct decision. So we created a test, pilot test, to determine the best ROI. 10,000 each, 30,000 total. The response mechanisms were the phone or email for a guest URL or girl and a personalized URL or Pearl. We also suggested that they do a testing of the creative, but the time didn't allow us to do that. We were going to do a second test with three different creatives. We also, based upon the results we got, voiced concern over the client's ability to actually handle. The projection was is that there was going to be between 1,000 and 1,200 leads come out of this campaign. And based upon the client, we raised the concern about whether they would actually be able to handle that. Initially said, no, we'll all come at the weekend, but then on Monday they said that, no, we probably need to run this in chunks of 100,000 at a time. So the results were, on the pilot test, that the people who went to the poll site, 10 times greater than the phone and twice as many as the girl, and the people who went to the poll site and actually went through the process and submitted were 5 times greater than the phone and 2.5 more than the girl. We were getting a 50% conversion from response to submission. And based upon the cost versus the value of the lead, they wanted to go ahead, yes, we're great, we've confirmed everything. And the first installment of the acquisition campaign was 100,000 pearls. That is finished. We have generated 383 leads compared to their previous, that would have been 40 leads. So they're super happy. There's almost 10 times lift. The conversion and ROI is not fully determined. When I questioned them recently, their answer was we have a fairly long onboarding process. Every one of those 383 has been contacted. We're onboarding as many as we can. But based upon the business that we've already written, at the margins that we have, we've already paid for this whole campaign, the additional 200,000 that we haven't run yet. The impact to us was from that we were invited to go in and see everybody in marketing and do a complete presentation of all our services and solutions prior to them coming up with their marketing plan for 2011. From that, they've decided that all their campaigns in 2011 will be using Pearl technology. There will be at least 12 of them and of similar size, and that we are now dealing with the marketing department. The previous company was dealing with purchasing and creative. We're now dealing with the marketing department, and the key here is we're helping drive the direction of future marketing spend. But we're not doing it by guesswork. The data is telling us what to do.
Great.
My personal recommendations, you know, the key requirements, I think the key requirements are totally attitude. The first thing to do is to sell this whole thing to your employees. If they're not on board, if they don't know what's going on, you're lost. Absolutely realize that not all your salespeople will make this transition. And this very much needs to be driven from the top of the company. It needs constant reassurance and constant commitment. And you absolutely have to be able to learn to enjoy the chaos, encourage the chaos, and keep the focus and identify those employees who like change. Recruit from outside. If you can and you're approaching a vertical market for you, find somebody in that vertical market, preferably with a marketing background, and preferably with absolutely no knowledge of print. Leverage your vendors. All the vendors that have been talked about and many more have some kind of support structure. You know, there's some excellent marketing resource centers out there. There's some of those supply support materials, sales support materials. And also, if you have to promote yourself using this technology, and a lot of the vendors will help you there, not only in subsidizing what you're doing, but also help you with getting data and help you with creative too. You absolutely have to adopt a why not, what if attitude. You have to question everything. Become a cavalier. You know, get some swagger and get your groove on. You've got to be proud of what you're doing here, and that's internally. My recommendations, do your homework. If your target is a public listed company, go onto their website, go onto investor relations, click on there. Download their 900-page annual report, take it home for the weekend and read it, because that annual report will tell you where their pain points are, where their business losses are, what their marketing objectives are, what their business objectives are, and all that they will not tell to their employees. So that's an excellent read. It's laborious, but it's worth it. 90% of this is preparation. You've got to have a long-haul mindset, and you've got to keep focused. One of the key things, and I can't say this too much, is ensure that other activities or people do not work against you. You know, don't live with this transactional-minded, traditional print, I've got ink in my blood mindset that detracts you from the purpose that you have and work against you. You know, you're going from that transactional, physical, static environment to a variable, conceptual environment, and you have to continually focus on that and work on that. You have to be an evangelist and give people the opportunity, the support, the training, and just don't give up.
I have one last quick question before I turn it over to Dean, and it links to the data side of it. And one of the participants said, you know, I've got a lot of customers that are tight-lipped with their data. How did you overcome that in terms of the clients you dealt with, or was that just not their headset?
We've had that initially. It seemed to be something that was there when we first started. We have certain contractual documents that we've prepared. I think there are actually some on the PODI site as part of their S3 sales tools, and I'm sure other people have got that documentation as support material. But you basically enter into a mutual confidentiality contract about that data, which lists what you do. You know, some companies want to leave that data within the solution because ideally what you want to be doing is taking 35,000 people that you send an initial program to and, you know, you get a response from 20%, then you want to continue that by bidirectional communication backwards and forwards and hone that in with the responders. So you want that data still in the solution.
And Barb, if I can jump in, this is John. I think, you know, beyond the security audit, which, you know, depending on the sensitivity of the data, that's good to do and have and the policies and procedures in place, the other thing is there is a way with data to, for instance, avoid transferring Social Security numbers back and forth by substituting other keys that are known to you and your customer, but don't directly tie back over the internet or anyplace else other than sort of walled off systems to the end sensitive data. And we end up doing that a lot to overcome the fears of, well, we don't want to transfer. Well, good, we don't want it, you know, but let's do this instead, which still allows the personalization without transferring the heavily sensitive data.
Okay, well, great. Thanks, guys. And now what I'm going to do is I am going to turn over to Dean Petrolakis from Ryder Dickinson. He's going to share how they've moved out with the multi-channel world. Dean, take it away.
Thanks, Barb, and thanks, everybody, for being on the line today, and I'm basically going to continue on kind of the theme that John and Paul have established in terms of letting everyone know a little bit of our history and where we are today, and then actually the first part of my little presentation here is going to pick up on a point that Paul just mentioned in terms of using the technology to promote ourselves and how we actually go about doing that and educating our customers, and then I'm going to show you a couple quick case studies. So Ryder Dickerson, we've been around for quite a while. We're a well-known institution here in the Chicago area. We've been around since 1903. And like a lot of people, we're still in the middle of making that full transition from a traditional sheet fed operation to more of a total solutions provider and helping our clients deliver better marketing results. We've been at it for the better part now of about 3 years, thereabouts, and it's an everyday exciting challenge, and we are right in the middle of it, and we're loving every minute of it. Wouldn't have it any other way. And like I said, we're finding that the value that we can bring to our customers today is so much more than we ever could before when we were just putting ink on paper. So it's definitely fun. It's not for the faint of heart, but we definitely are enjoying it. We have a great partnership with Mindfire. Barb mentioned them as one of the partners in this industry that can help, and we have a super relationship with our friends at Mindfire. We leverage their software to do all of our cross-media offerings. In fact, through our educational offerings, Joe Manos at Mindfire has spoken at a couple of been part of one of our webinars that I'm going to talk about. He spoke at one of our seminars, and we're actually hosting a conference in another month. And Joe's going to actually be one of our breakout session leaders at the conference, so that's how they support us. They do a great job educating us and supporting us in our sales efforts when we need them. As I mentioned, we educate our clients year-round through a brand that we have called Printform. And through Printform is where we let our customers know the newest trends and the technologies that are at our disposal. And we're doing a lot of that in the cross-media world lately. And, you know, right off the bat, the first thing I'm going to show everyone is a campaign that we ran for ourselves using the Mindfire technology to promote a webinar. Now, many people, when they have a webinar, don't promote it with print, but we wanted to walk the walk here, and we wanted to promote this webinar through multi-channels to show our customers how you could actually promote an event and drive attendance for an event with cross-channel, cross-media communications. So what we did is we had a webinar that was called The Code to Know, and it was all about QR codes and how they fit into the larger cross-media mix. And so what we did is we had a beautifully designed postcard set up, and we mailed out an oversized postcard, and you can see the postcard had a huge QR code on the front of it, listing the date of the event. And then on the back, it was personalized, drove people to their own personalized landing page. They could also get there using the QR code and register right on the spot using the QR code for the webinar. And we had a tremendous response to the mailing. And what we also did is we, in addition to sending out the postcard, we sent followed up with an email, an HTML email, timed at 3 or 4 days after the postcards went out, with the same messaging, with a link to the same personalized URL to give people multiple ways to sign up. We also promoted the webinar through our social media outlets and had a tremendous response. We had 200 people sign up for the webinar, which for us was a big attendance in our among our customer and lead base. And then we set up a simple landing page experience where people could come and learn more about what they were going to learn on the webinar. What we did next is when people got to the landing pages, we wanted to do a little survey. And this is one of the first things that I'd like to point out is the importance of surveying your customers when you get them online and get them onto these personalized URLs. It's a great way to build up intelligence for future campaigns. We asked some very simple questions here in terms of people's experience and knowledge and actual usage of QR codes, so that we could go back to all the people that responded and use that in our follow-up with these clients and have relevant follow-up with the people based on the way they answered the questions. And, of course, we wanted them to sign up through this. And the other thing we did is, we always were able to get people's contact information. And then at the end of the landing page experience, we were able to drive people to sign up. What we're also able to do is have downloadable content that people can get. So another way for us to get good content in people's hands, we had a white paper on QR codes that we were able to download. People were able to download, and we were able to send them to our LinkedIn group. We have a LinkedIn group, a print form LinkedIn group that's growing, so we were driving people to that as well. And this was a tremendous webinar for us. We had lots of activity, tons of questions. In fact, we had so many questions that we had to create a question and answer document and email it out after the fact because I couldn't get to all the questions. As I led the webinar with Joe Manos. And it proved to us just how much people crave knowledge about this topic in our world when it comes to cross-media, and especially QR codes, because they're so new. So the lesson in this is that you have to use the technology to promote yourself, and you have to educate your customers about it. You can't expect for them to learn about it on their own. It's up to you to educate your customer so that the customer knows exactly what technology is available to them, how they can use it in their world. So that would be my first bit of advice. I mean, we do that all the time. But the next is a case study I'd like to walk you through. Let me get to the next slide. Here we go. Is I do a lot of work in higher education, and a local university here, Robert Morris University, one of their big campaign outreaches every year is their ACT-SAT outreach, and we've worked now for 2 years on this campaign and modified it, and it's to the point where it's really providing just tremendous results for Robert Morris. And the whole background for the campaign is Robert Morris likes to reach out to all students, like all colleges and universities, to take the SAT and ACT and try to, of course, get them to gain some interest in Robert Morris. And the whole thrust for this campaign is to get students to come to an all-campus open house. Robert Morris has multiple campuses across the Chicagoland area. And what Robert Morris was looking to do was really segment their world and target their prospective students on a variety of variables, including some basics as male, female, but really getting down to major preferences and test scores, so they could create messaging along the side here that was relevant to the test score and the scholarship that the student qualified for based on their test score. And as we move to the back of the postcard, there was even more variable content. If you were interested in athletics, we put athletic images in there. If you were in-state or out-of-state, different imagery popped up. They were promoting studying in Chicago if you were out-of-state. If you were in-state, you didn't really need to know about the value of Chicago. You already knew it. And then the offer was go online, register for the open house, and win a, Robert Morris t-shirt. And, of course, it was a male or female version of the t-shirt. And, of course, we incorporated a QR code as well for those students that were living on their smartphones. And then it was a very detailed landing page experience where we could dive down even more with the students. And, again, the ultimate thrust for the campaign was to get students right here to come to the open house. But one of the beauties of this landing page experience that we discovered right off the bat in last year's campaign was this question here, number two. I'm not sure if I can visit, but please ask me later. What Robert Morris discovered was that they, first of all, sold out their open houses. Their open houses were booked, and they had a tremendous response rate. But there were 1,700 additional people that could not make it but were interested in learning more about the university. And they had that information because all of this was recorded on their online dashboard. And admissions representatives were able to follow up with these students in real time. And these were leads that they otherwise may have never had if they didn't give people the online response channel. So this actually proved to be one of the most valuable aspects of the campaign. Secondarily, Robert Morris, what we've also done for them is, right, as most schools have, they have an application deadline, priority application deadline. And Robert Morris, we encouraged them, leading up to that deadline, to send out a secondary HTML email using the same graphics to people who had not responded yet. And we just did this recently. Sent out the email on a Friday, and over the weekend and leading into Monday, the response rates went through the roof, and they increased attendance at the open house and got people to fill out applications online. We drove them with a link right to their online application. And they were thrilled. The director of marketing, vice president of marketing, could not believe how just a simple last-minute little email poll pulled such a great response. But, again, it's the use of multiple channels, as Barb mentioned in the beginning. We're hitting them through print, through email. We can also now start to incorporate mobile messaging. We're linking students to Robert Morris's social media groups. All right, they're really utilizing all the channels. And then, again, the same type of stuff. We can get students to update their profile, give us more information about them, which is all recorded for future marketing. And then thank you messages are sent out based on the student's major, the deans of the different schools. The messaging and the picture pops up based on who the dean is. So it's very very relevant, very targeted to the students. And, again, tremendous success rate. Robert Morris actually had an increase of 79% in their lead pool through the use of this campaign last year. And, of course, this year's campaign is still in the works, so I don't have those results yet. But tremendous campaign that Robert Morris is sure to continue to do. And we're going to continue to work with them and to massage this and update it and create it. We have a meeting next week, and we're going to continue to talk about ways that we can make it better. And this is the thing that you have to do. There is no shortage of sales time in continuing to make these campaigns better for your clients. You always have to look to make them better. You got to have those debriefing meetings, what worked, what didn't work, and continue to bring that value to the customer and help them shape their next campaigns. It's not just a one-and-done type of thing. That's a surefire way to really have it be a one-and-done and never do it again. And, of course, thank you emails, not attending emails. I'm just showing you all the variable type of stuff that could happen. And the last little example I just want to show real quickly is another university I do a lot of work with here, Loyola University Chicago. It started experimenting with QR codes last year and into this year. The only reason I'm showing this is that it's a great example of this was a QR code that drove people to sign up for an open house. And what we're working with on Loyola is trying to figure out the best use for QR codes. And sometimes maybe it isn't just to get people to sign up for an event. We're discovering with Loyola that a lot of people aren't really signing up for events via the QR code, but they're getting amazing hits when they put videos in there or they're just putting a link to their social media outlets. So that's another thing where I'm having constant talks with the client about what is the best use for it. And my overriding thought here as I close is you have to be able to talk to your customers about their strategies. You know, these pearls, QR codes, all this stuff is just a commodity if you sell it that way. If you don't really get into the customer's mindset of what their strategy is and what they want to do and what their overriding objectives are, you really can't help them develop a campaign that'll bring any value to them. So John and Paul really touched on that as well. You really have to sit down, take the time to understand your customer's world, understand their needs, listen to what their needs are, and then bring the solution to them that you think fits exactly what those needs are. So this is that's my parting advice. And Barb, I'll turn it back to you.
Well, thank you very, very much. I do want to just, you have one last slide, I believe, in here on recommendations, and I didn't know if you wanted to wrap with that, and then I've got a couple of quick questions for you.
Yes, exactly, sorry. Yeah, There are start small is my advice. You dip your toe in the water, and there's definitely margins in quality variable data campaigns. There's the value you can bring, and the value that you can bring to your revenues is tremendous. But you got to start small, and you got to make sure you can do it, and you got to use it yourself. And like I said, drink your own Kool-Aid. Market your services using the technologies. We are doing that all the time. Anytime we promote ourselves to anything, any event that we're hosting, or any kind of self-promotion, we're using our technology because our customers see us using it. They know that we're using it, and they see it, and it only intrigues them more, makes them want to do it.
One quick question for you, and it's kind of an interesting question from one of our audience participants. It says, you know, you made a lot of investment in time and money to print posters. In the interim, how do you pay for your web presses, and do these campaigns lead to larger print jobs? And I'm going to ask Dean to respond to that first.
I missed the first part. You said you made a lot of investment in print. What was the first part of your question?
It says you invested a lot of money in printing postcards, but how does it pay for the traditional web presses, and does it lead to larger jobs?
Does it lead to larger jobs? The way I can answer that is this, and I think John was the one that mentioned it, this is definitely a long-term investment, and there's no, I mean, you see some immediate ROIs with some campaigns, but to me and to us as a company, if we're not constantly bringing value to our customers, it's not a sustainable way to continue to do business. The days of just quoting on jobs and hoping you get the job based on price or whatever it might be, it's just not a sustainable way to do business when really customers today need us to be more of a total solutions provider. So I would say in my own world, the fact that I have more time with the marketing executive and I'm talking more strategies, it's really put me in a different light, and it does open up opportunities for more profit on other types of jobs that I may have never even gotten before.
Yeah. Any comment, Paul or John, on that question before I wrap up here?
Yeah, this is Paul. I think that really is the dilemma. You've got to keep cylinders turning to be able to support these movements. So you've got to have a good business model in the offset world as well. But you also have the realization that that offset world is changing terrifically. You know, we've gone in less than 10 years down from something like 47,000 to 34,000 printing establishments. The world is changing. You have to have that understanding, and I can't answer where you're going to find that replacement work for that web because I don't know whether it's actually going to be there. I think when you're in control of the relationship that you have with the C-level marketing people, you can often use it to your advantage, but you still need to be totally focused on getting the client's results for them because you have to look at this from a long-term basis. You can't do a smash and grab, get a great job, but you can do a lot of work, which is hybrid, which would be offset shells and digital imprints. So
great.
There's many ways to skin a cat.
Well, and I think, Paul, I'm going to wrap there, but I'd like to tell everybody a couple things. And the first one is, and I think it links to the question that we just got, which is the rate of dynamics in terms of media has changed significantly. And what you need to do is you need to take a look and not stick your head in the sand. And so my simple recommendations are it's time to rethink your strategy. And what you need to do is you need to understand that marketers and service providers need to accept the fact that the balance of power has shifted. And what you're finding in today's market is that the consumer is in control. And what you need to look at is that the economy, technological advances, and cultural changes will continue to drive cross-media direct marketing opportunities. You've got to not just personalize, you actually have to engage the customer with interactivity, and that's going to become essential. It's going to cut across not just print, but mobile, online, and social. I need to be able to get somebody from a QR code to a video. I need to be able to keep them actively engaged in a dialogue. And so campaigns need to communicate with customers and prospects with all channels on. And you're going to have to develop and deliver communication strategies. And I think you saw examples from Dean, John, and Paul that create powerful opt-in, preference-driven databases. And with that, I'd like to take a minute to thank all of our panelists and thank you for your time and attention. Hopefully you've had a great experience. And John, Paul, and Dean, thanks a bunch. Have a great rest of the day, everybody.